Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Before we get started, I'm excited to share that my book, Something Extra, launches on September 30th, and you can pre-order it today. It is rooted in the remarkable spirit of our daughter, Allie, and the heartfelt conversations we've had on the podcast. You'll find wisdom and practical tools to ignite the leader within you and uncover your own Something Extra. Visit somethingextrabook.com to order your copy today. I'm delighted to have Ann Eileen Thompson on the show today. Ann is a faith-driven career and leadership coach, author, and speaker. Welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Ann Eileen Thompson. I am so thrilled that we can make this work today.
I'm just so excited to have this conversation. I feel like when people who share a faith and share leadership get together, and there's just always something cool that happens. So I'm looking forward to it and anticipating great stuff out of this conversation.
You know what? That's a great way to put it, because I'm anticipating that too. And I'm anticipating that our conversation hopefully is going to help somebody else. Yeah. And I know you've got so much wisdom, but I just told you in a sidebar conversation, you and I have lots of commonalities, and I just figured out your name is Ann Thompson. My maiden name was Thompson. So
amazing.
We could be sisters. Who knows?
Although the Thompson name is one of those names, though. It's like Smith, Thompson. You know, there's a couple of them like that that are, who knows? But
we'll
claim it. Let's just claim it.
Let's just go ahead. Let's go ahead and claim it. Yeah. Yes. Well, I always love to tell my guests where I meet my guests. You know, I mean, I like to tell my listeners where I meet my guests, and people are like, "How do you even meet all these people?" And so, you know, let's just go ahead and embarrass him. Okay, can we just embarrass Jim Bechtold?
Yes, yes. Let's do it.
Because Jim Bechtold connected us and said, the two of you need to know each other. And it's so funny, and we'll talk about your podcast, but you have a podcast as well. And I was looking, and do you know how many of your guests have been my guests?
How many? Have there been that much overlap?
A lot.
That's so
cool.
Tonya
Jackson Miles, Catherine Gates, Joe Saxton, Mark Whitaker, Jordan Rayner, Dennis Bosador, Emily Chang, Corey Calls. All those have been my guests too. So
that's
I'm
amazing.
Wondering though if Jim Bechtold was the common denominator.
Well, he did connect me to a lot of those folks, and there were some of them that I knew through other connections too. But I bet if we went onto LinkedIn and looked at all the connections between all three of us or something, it would be that man has so many connections.
I know.
And his gift to connect the dots between people is such a blessing. It's such it's really indicative of how the kingdom ought to be working. We ought to be connecting with each other and learning from each other. And he just does such a great job of that.
Collaborating with one another.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, you know, when you collaborate, you can create something new. You know, we're creating a new episode today, but I thank the world of Jim Bechtold and Jenny, my EA, who you've met.
Yeah.
And Jenny's never met him in person, but I said, I cannot wait till you can meet Jim in person. Because he's a force.
He is a force.
Yeah.
He is.
I've got so much to talk to you about, and I'm so excited for you to share your wisdom with our listeners. But let's go back to growing up, because I know you grew up in Cincinnati.
I did.
And yeah, and you even talk about in like your keynotes and stuff, like your roots and what your roots in Cincinnati meant to you. So can you like unpack that a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I love the Midwest. You and I are both Midwesterners, and there's a culture in the Midwest that is, I think, very well aligned to Christian faith. There's a generosity in the Midwest. There's an openness in the Midwest. There's a and not that the Midwest has the market on all of those characteristics, but I've been enough other places and met people from other places that I recognize that the Midwestern, even the connectivity, we were just talking about Jim, and Jim's based here in Cincinnati too, and the openness to making connections and things really has kind of formed a lot of my character, I think. It's hard to say, chicken or egg, was my character formed by my upbringing or my upbringing, you know, it's hard to say, but I believe that this, and frankly, there's some really cool stuff happening in Cincinnati around entrepreneurship and faith and business and faith. And we are a very, some people have called Cincinnati the Silicon Valley of the Midwest because there's so much entrepreneurial activity. But I would say what the difference is that it is very rooted in a spirit of kindness and open-handedness and generosity, not to be confused with weakness ever. But there's a powerful collaboration that happens when people are willing to open their hands and open their minds and share ideas.
Well, I'm just thinking like generosity, right? It's not just when we think of generosity, a lot of times we think of material, resources, that sort of thing, but really it's not that. It's being open with whatever you've been given, right? And saying, no. If I've got something here that can help you lift you up, I'm going to share that. And sometimes that comes through connections, that comes
That's
through,
right.
sharing of our talents and not just our treasures, right? So I love that. I know that you were the first in your family to graduate from college.
I was.
So tell me about that milestone and how that really has shaped your drive and your perspective on leadership. The other thing, and you can maybe weave this in here, I also read something where you describe your early ambition as motivated by a desire to build a life of purpose, impact, and success.
You know, it's so interesting, Lisa, because I can recall as a kid never thinking that there would ever be any other path that I would take other than going to college. And it wasn't necessarily because I had a big dream of this is the specific thing I'm going to do. It was actually rooted in a love of learning. I love to learn. And I remember when I graduated from, I went to Ohio State. My degree is in journalism, which is quite interesting because I was never a journalist. But there's a whole story there. But what's interesting is that when I graduated, I thought, you know, what I would really like to do is stay in school forever and keep learning. And the great thing is that I think while kind of going through that process, it honestly didn't occur to me very often that I was the first. I was the first, but it wasn't something that I carried. I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful that I didn't carry a burden of feeling like I have to prove myself to my family. Now, I wanted to prove myself to myself. I wanted to make an impact. My mother tells me a story that when I was about 7, I said to her, "Mom, I just want to impact the world for good." And she didn't tell me that until probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I hadn't remembered it. And she said it, actually, it was 2 years ago after my first podcast. She listened to my podcast and she said, "Anne, I listened to your podcast and I just thought, she's doing it." And it
Oh,
was such a proud moment. It was such a proud moment of recognizing that the ambition, what it was never for me. The ambition was always about how can I give away what I've got, which again, it can only be rooted in kind of what I was brought up believing, right? So
yes.
I didn't carry a burden about it. I carried an excitement about it, an anticipation of being able to give away And I've always had this innate understanding that if I'm holding too tightly to something, I can't ever catch what's next.
Oh,
So
that's
my
good. Say that again.
willingness,
Say that again, Anne.
if I'm holding too tightly to something, I can't ever catch what's next. I use the word picture sometimes with folks, Lisa, of saying, you remember those round bouncy balls we used to play with? We used to play foursquare with on the playground in elementary school. I always tell people, think about if you're holding four or five of those bouncy balls and somehow you're able to balance them in your arms, and you see that the kid across the playground has something even better that he wants to toss at you. You are not going to be able to catch it unless you're willing to let go of what's in your hands. And that motivating desire for my part has just been there for so long, even before I recognized that it was there. I never actually recognized that it wasn't there for everyone, because I just kind of thought it was, this is how we've all been wired. And but it's I've come to realize it is a somewhat unique positioning. You know, I would rather give away value and wisdom and insight and experience. Not that I don't also want to make a good living. Of course, we all need and want to do that. But this desire, this, and I get such a high from seeing when something
Seeing it off.
I've learned has helped someone else. And
Could
so,
not agree more.
yeah, so I think going to college was just it was a way to give me the input and the skills and the experience that would allow me to, you know, continue to contribute.
Oh, that is good, and I really
Yeah.
love that. That's and I think sometimes I'm going to what you just said. If you're holding too tightly something, you cannot catch what's coming. And I'm gonna put a thread through it because
Yeah.
someone told me, a spiritual mentor of mine said something to me like back in 2013 about your time. And if you have got your time so scheduled that you absolutely have no margin, there's no time, there's no margin for God to even bring something new into your life. And it was a pivotal time for me because I let go of some things that were gobbling up my time to make room for other things. And I'll just tell you, you're coming, I co-founded the Rooted Sisters in 2015. That would not have happened. I let go of some things in 2013 that was keeping my margin like zero. I had zero margin. And that may I it could have been a case where I'd been like, yeah, it's a great idea. When I have time, we'll do that. And so yeah, that's I just feel like that's a really good nugget for our listeners. Well, you started at Macy's. You started at
I did. I did. Before it was called Macy's in Cincinnati, it was called something else, but it was
Yeah,
Macy's.
because it was Macy's. So you started there. What did those early years, and then we're going to move in because you were at P&G for a long time. You had a wonderful career, but what did those early roles teach you when you were at
You
Macy's?
know, yeah, so Macy's was a really interesting role for me. And when we talk Proctor, I'll clarify, I wasn't in the executive suite. I was an executive, but not in the executive
But
suite.
okay.
But anyway, the years at Macy's were quite interesting, Lisa, because I will tell you, I had never heard the word entrepreneur before. And I didn't hear it at Macy's. I didn't hear it until a couple of years later. But my favorite story from my Macy's days, I was a sales manager of the lingerie department at the Kenwood Town Center, which is the busiest, most high volume store in the region. And when I came into the department, it was like 42% to sales goal or something, and I needed to get it to 100% of sales goal in order to get any kind of salary increase. And I made terrible money. This was back in the early 90s, so everybody made terrible money compared to today, I guess. But I wanted to succeed. I wanted to hit this goal. I wanted to get a salary increase. And so I thought in my 23-year-old mind, well, I need to pay attention to what's happening outside of this store. And that was about the time that Victoria's Secret was launching, right? And my lingerie department at Macy's was a bunch of brown and white like bras in a box. Do you remember those? Do you
Yes.
remember the bras in a box?
Yeah.
Victoria's Secret had these beautiful, colorful bras and lace and all this cool stuff. And so I thought, well, how am I going to convince my buyer to give me some new merchandise? So I went on this mission to see all of what all the other stores had. And then I did this analysis of every single product I sold on my floor, every single one. This was before the days when we had ChatGPT to do stuff like this. I mean, it was very
Yeah.
manual effort.
Yes.
And I put together a report and I called the buyer. I don't even know in hindsight how I got the buyer's phone number or information because it wasn't,
You
we
were
didn't have all the,
resourceful, Anne.
I was very resourceful. And the buyer was thrilled. I made an argument for why I needed these types of styles, not those types of styles. She was thrilled. She was thrilled. And so the next day, when my boss called me into her office, I thought surely I was going to get some kudos. I did not get kudos. What I got instead was a scolding
Oh no.
that it wasn't my job to call the buyer, and how dare I have done that? And there was something in me, Lisa, that I'm sure in hindsight, I'm sure it was the Holy Spirit that said, this is not the place for you. You've learned what you needed to learn here, and it's time to move on. And back then, if you knew someone who knew someone, you could figure out how to get yourself an interview at Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
So I did. I was very resourceful as a young woman, and I knew someone who knew someone who worked for Procter, and I worked my way into a conversation there and had the interview with Procter. And again, still when I joined Procter, didn't know the word entrepreneurial. But now when I look back on that experience at Macy's, what I can see is that God was shaping me and telling me who I was and how he had designed me, even back then, even when I didn't have words for it, even when I didn't understand. And this career that started in retail, a journalism major working in retail, then moves to consumer and market knowledge at Procter, where I was studying why people did what they did and how they made their decisions and what they were going to buy and how much of it they were going to buy and what they thought of different product and brand ideas. So it was a to me, when I look back on it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But a lot of people would look at that career shift and go, what happened there? But I see the through line that started with this instinct that God had given me, which is a very entrepreneurial instinct.
That's awesome. Well, and
Yeah.
most, I mean, I'm thinking about most organizations, truly. I mean, you don't want to be a, you don't want to be rogue about it, but entrepreneurial
Yes.
is usually celebrated, right?
Yes.
You want people to think and go, hey, if we did this and come up with new ideas
Yeah.
and things like that. So, you know, that was wise of you at that
Yeah.
point, though, to be a young professional to say, eh, this is against kind of how I'm wired, and this is
Yeah.
not the place for me. So I'm
Yeah.
sure when you went to Proctor, I'm sure that entrepreneurial, those skills were more celebrated, you know,
They certainly were.
innovation and
It wasn't called that back then. Even at Procter, it wasn't called that, but I was rewarded for it. I would tell people often, I'm going to fly under the radar and get things done and do things that other people might see as risky in terms of ideas that I might put forward or things that I might support or drive for. And I had a couple of moments where I thought, I might get fired today because of this crazy thing I'm doing. But I never did. I never did because I think the company understood the value of people who were willing to push the edges.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and clearly they did understand that because you climbed the corporate ladder, and you
I
were
did.
not in the C-suite, but you were running global teams. You
I
were.
was running, yeah, by the time I left, I was running a global team that was responsible for all of the sales forecasting and marketing media optimizations, all this optimization of the spending at the time. And so, yeah, you know what? I loved Procter. I loved my time there. I loved the growth opportunities, the incredible leaders that I met that to this day have formed my network.
Oh,
Amazing people.
yeah. I mean,
Amazing people.
we could do a whole segment on Proctor, because I know I remember telling Jim, I can't tell you how many leaders that I have known over the years that started at Procter. Yeah. And I'm like, what in the world? What is in the water at Procter & Gamble? You know, and I remember Jim telling me it's like one of the leadership development, you know, machines out there. I mean, just they do such great work. Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you this question. This will get into your faith a little bit, but you've shared that a women's Bible study at P&G shifted your view of work.
Yep.
So can you tell me a little bit about that story?
I will. And this will connect even another dot. So I was probably about 3 years into my career at Procter & Gamble when a friend of mine, who is now in the C-suite at Procter, who was friends with Vivian Bechtold, Jim's wife, and Vivian was starting a women's Bible study at Procter. They were going to do Experiencing God, Henry Blackaby.
Love it.
I had grown up Catholic, but had been in a season of saying, I'm not, I just don't feel like I'm learning enough. I want to be learning in some other ways. And there's, now I can look back and appreciate so much about the Catholic faith and the Catholic traditions. And I needed to learn outside of that construct, right? And so Vivian invited me into this Bible study. And I'll tell you, I remember the first time sitting there with these other women, all of whom outranked me, except for one, but most of them way outranked me. And seeing them and hearing them talk about Jesus in an office felt a little weird to me at first. But the more they talked about it, the more I kept thinking, wait a minute, God really cares about my career? God designed me for a career? And that's when some of the dots started to connect. Wait a minute, maybe that the problem I had at Macy's, the reason I just couldn't stay there, maybe the reason I love what I love and it's different than what I see other people loving, maybe that's actually God's design. And it really was the genesis of me understanding that God wants to be in my career, that he has a plan and it's a good plan. It's not always going to be linear. It's not always going to be perfectly always up and to the right, but he has a plan for my career and he wants to be involved in the details of my day to day. I started praying before meetings. I started praying for the people that I worked with. And really quickly, what started to happen was I started to grow as a leader. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think it's just because I was wired as a great leader. I think I was wired that way by God. But I really believe the more that I put my trust in him, the more that he trusted me and the more responsibility he gave me and the more space he gave me to lead and to try new things and to experiment and to contribute. And that one Bible study, one person's invitation, I think so often about that, how powerful that one invitation can be.
Aren't you glad, Anne, that Vivian saw you and made that invitation, you know, because she could have sat back and said, oh, I'm not sure if this would really resonate with Anne or not. But, you know, that's a great lesson in and of itself, you know, just being led. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll jump right back in in the second half here, and then we'll, I got a lot more to talk to you about. There's so much to you, Anne. There's so much to you. Let's talk about this. So in 2011, you co-founded the Garage Group.
Yes.
And grew it for nearly a decade. So tell me a little bit about the Garage Group. What was the Garage Group? What was the vision? What were you hoping to accomplish?
Yeah, so the Garage Group was a very much a culmination of this insight about, gosh, I'm actually a pretty entrepreneurial person. And I had worked and operated in a large corporation. Now, the backstory is that 4 years prior to that, I had left Procter only because the Lord told me to, because I sure as heck didn't want to. I loved what I was doing, but the Lord really prompted me, and I had learned how to listen to him, and I was practicing trusting him. And so I left. I had gone to a small company. That small company was very entrepreneurial. It's when I actually really really recognized and discovered that that thing in me that was innovative and a little risk-taking and always willing to push the envelope was called entrepreneurship. And so I got a chance to practice that and see what it was like to live life in a small company and learn about running a small company. And then a business partner and I started the Garage Group, and our mission was to enable people in corporate environments to operate like entrepreneurs and enable those corporations to embrace that.
To support them.
Yeah, and this was
Oh, that's great.
before, the all the Eric Ries and all those guys and all the books were written about that. We were a little bit ahead of our time on it, but we had such a blast teaching and equipping through a lot of innovation work. We did mostly innovation work with those companies. So our clients were folks like American Express and Nike and Kellogg's and Kraft. And of course, Procter and Gamble was a client of ours. And it was just so much fun. They still are doing that work. The company is still going strong and led by a couple of amazing women that I just admire and respect so deeply. And so that was quite a fun and energizing and exciting chapter that ultimately I went kind of up a hill of like just amazing stuff and then hit a place of burnout. And then that led me into a whole other season. So
I know.
yet
And I
more
want to tell you.
transitions.
Yes, and you are, that's what you help people with now is
Yes.
transitions. And we're going to talk about that. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Ann Eileen Thompson on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Ann Eileen Thompson. So, Ann, we were just talking about the Garage Group, and I know that you stepped back, hired a CEO, you guys sold, but in 2021, you took a career break.
I
Just
did.
a break. Why was this pause so important?
In hindsight, Lisa, that pause was an act of trust. And the truth is, I had such a great and a slightly wild ride at the Garage Group. We hit the Inc. 500 list a couple times, and if you actually think about what the Inc. 500 list is saying, it's saying you're the one of the fastest growing companies. Which sounds really good on paper until you actually think about what's the impact of the team to be the fastest growing company for several years running. And the truth is, we were running really hard and really fast. And I hit a wall, to be quite honest. I hit a wall. And I knew that I needed to untangle myself from that business. And I will also say that when I said I would take a break, I really thought it would be 3 months max because I really believed, well, I'm wired to work. It is part of who I am. I have to do it. And the reality is, once I started actually going and spending some time with the Lord during that season, because I knew I wanted to spend some time with him. But I'll tell you, I had a strategy, because us type A's always have a
Of
strategy.
course you did.
And my strategy was, hey, Lord, here's the list of 10 things that I could do with the rest of my life. So you, why don't you just tell me which one I should do? And I'll sit with you. And what I was really saying was, I'll logic my way through this. And then I basically said to him, I made a little deal with him. Give me the chills, give me the tingles when I hit the one that you think I should do. And he was dead silent. He was dead silent. And so I got towards the end of that 3 months and I thought, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Because I don't want to do something that's outside God's will. I don't want to do something that he doesn't want me to do, but he hasn't answered me yet. And it was in that quiet that I finally heard him say to me, hey, girl, what brings you joy? And I was like, man, I can't answer that question. I don't know. I know what makes me happy. I know how to make money. I know how to lead well. I know all those things, but I don't know what brings me joy. Joy is such a high bar. That's like being content no matter what is going on. That's being rooted, right? It's being so rooted and so content that you can get through anything. And that began an exploration that took me another 12 months. Took me another 12 months. And during that time, he so wooed me and willed me into remembering the desires of my heart that he had planted in me as a child to make impact on
To
the
make an
world,
impact,
to
Marie.
write. I loved to write when I was a kid. I loved to express myself creatively when I was a kid. And the more I got into that and realized, hey, here's how I designed you. If you will trust me in my design and do what I designed you to do, you're going to have the impact that I also wired in your heart the desire to have. But it took a lot of letting go of that means I'm not chasing an Inc. 500 list. I'm not chasing a CEO title. I'm chasing the fruits of the spirit. I'm chasing love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and all those things, right? And so that sabbatical, I call it, led me to a place where I would say what I call in the book that I've just written a book about all these career transitions, but I call it the alignment, right? I'm fully aligned. This is my confident stride, this season I'm in now, because this is the place where I'm fully aligned with where God wants me. And it took a lot of twists and turns in my career to get me there. And I would not have gotten there if I didn't take a break. Because when we don't slow down, we can't hear him.
That's, gosh. I mean, and I'm just thinking there's so much packed into what you just said. So that you kind of were telling God, okay, I'm going to take this 3 months. And then you tell me.
Yes.
And
Oh, yeah.
then by 3 months, he had not quite answered you because he had not done what he needed to do in you, in your heart, right? There was
Exactly.
still some more preparation to be
Yes.
done in Anne's heart, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So don't be, I mean, the waiting piece is so hard for everyone, right? But I'm always like, don't despise the waiting.
Yes.
And just because you
Yes.
think nothing's happening doesn't mean that it's not happening. Right, he's
Yeah.
still working, even if you don't see it at that time. And there was preparation and things in your heart that needed to get to that where you can be in the season and realize, gosh, here are the things that bring you joy. There's just so much packed in there. And I love, you said, oh, you love the writing. Well, of course you love writing. You were a journalism major.
Right.
Right. So getting back to that, and now you've
Yeah.
got your book. Gosh, there's so much. I mean, and I know that like today you're coaching leaders and how to integrate their faith into their work.
Yep.
And that is, I hear that a lot, and I think that there's a lot of movement there, right? And you'd said something like that with the Bible study that Vivian had invited you into. You're sitting there going, God cares about my work. Here's the reality. God cares about everything. He cares
Sure
about
does.
every single detail. And in fact, if you think that the scripture doesn't talk about that, it does. In
It
Colossians,
sure
it
does.
says, work as unto the Lord,
Yeah.
right? Work. I mean, he wants our work, he wants to be a part of that as much as any other part of our life. So I think this is a challenge for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people compartmentalize, right?
Yes.
It's like, okay,
Yes.
here's my work. Okay. And then here's my faith over here in this bucket. And to me, I mean, I'm not being true to myself if the two are not integrated. So,
Yeah.
what have you seen? What are some of those challenges? Why do you think this is that
Yeah.
people find this so challenging?
Lisa, I think it's very complex, and I think there are probably different reasons for each person in terms of what holds them back. But some of the big themes I think are really probably center around our identity. Because when so many of us, we don't realize how much our identity is tied to our work until we have to step away from it. And when we do, we have to untangle that, right? And the my identity as a CEO or as a leader or as a customer service representative or as a whatever you are is so strong that we almost feel like, well, that's my part of my life to lead. and I'll go to church on Sunday. It's just, we just don't, our identity is so wrapped up in that. When we start to understand that who we are, our identity is actually rooted in the Lord, then we start to not be able to escape the reality that our work and our life and our faith ought to be fully integrated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think most often it's coming from an identity issue. And then the second big reason I think people don't do it is fear. There's so much
stigma
and fear around, well, if I express my faith, people aren't going to like me. And again, this actually ties back to identity, because if people don't like me, well, what does that mean? It means something for my identity versus it's okay if people don't like me. Some people aren't going to like you.
Right.
It's okay. Right.
Yes. And
so I really believe that, you know, the Lord so longs not just to be in the details of our career, but he longs for us to recognize that he's using our work, he's using our careers to form us, to shape us, to mold us, to actually help us see ourselves the way he sees us.
Mm-hmm.
And I long for more people to see that. I long for more people to recognize that their career and their work can be aligned with how God designed us to be.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that's going to look very different than what they originally thought their career ambition was. Some people think, I need to get to the top. But if you look at scripture and you understand the, you know, when scripture in talks about the body, some people are a nose, some people are an arm, some people are a toe, somebody's the heart, somebody's the brain, somebody's the, you know, the blood, somebody's the skin. Like, okay, if we're all different, we can't all be at the top of every company. We
That's
can't.
Right.
It wouldn't work. And the kingdom doesn't work that way either. But we get really confused about that. And we put our ambition ahead of that, which is entirely driven by what we want our identity to be, which is usually driven by some kind of fear. I don't want to not be enough. I need to be seen as this or that. This, I need to be seen as accomplished. I need to be seen as well-spoken. I need to be seen as whatever it is that we think is so important. This is why it's interesting when you ask me about going to college, I'm so grateful that I never felt that burden. Had I felt the burden of you're the first person in your family to do this, that would have been probably conflicted and somehow messed with my identity.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful that it didn't.
Right.
School wasn't a way for me to prove who I was. It was just part of the journey that the Lord had me on.
So
your job, you know, your job isn't who you are. It's just part of the journey that God has you on.
Right.
Yeah.
And as you know, and I've got a book that's,
yes,
you know, that's on pre-order right now. And, you know, the first part of it's divided into four parts. And the first part is really about, it starts on the inside. And yes, identity is a big piece of that. Because here's the thing, titles change, positions change. So when that's stripped away, who are you?
Yeah.
You're not that title. You're not that. That's a role that you play.
Yes. Yes.
It's a role that you play.
Yes.
But it's not who you are, and you shouldn't have your identity tied to that. And I've got, goodness gracious, so many stories about that. Well, gosh, I've got so much more to talk about, but I know we're running out of time here. I do want our listeners to know that you host the Faith Driven Leader podcast.
Yes. Yes.
Have there been, I know you're like me, you love people and you love learning from people, right? We said that at the very beginning. You're like, I love to learn. So do I. That's one of my values, is growth. But, you know, has there been a really inspiring or surprising conversation that you've had on your show? Can you think of one or two? And I get asked this question a lot, you know, and I've had almost 350 leaders, and I'm like, I love every one of them. Every one
yes.
of them is my favorite, you know. But has there been one that's really stood out to you, Anne, or when you got off of there, you just felt like, oh, I just had a therapy session with that person?
You know, there have been several like that. There have been several that were so inspiring and so moving. Probably one of the ones I really enjoyed the most, I interviewed Dr. Kevin Brown. He's the president of Asbury University. So, you know, Asbury was where that big revival happened.
The big revival, right. Yes, yeah. I remember that.
And I interviewed him about a year after that. And we talked so much about what was the role of leadership in a situation like that. Because my husband and I went to Asbury twice during the revival, and we got a chance to witness how the leaders were responding. That was entirely Holy Spirit driven. And if you weren't there, you probably would not believe it. You probably wouldn't understand what really was happening there, but the move of the Spirit was so strong. And what you saw were leaders and administrators taking out the trash, helping people find places to sit, helping to make sure that food was distributed or water was distributed, or the sound was working, or whatever needed to be happening, because the Spirit was moving through the students. Mm. And the conversation with Kevin was so inspiring, because I will tell you, he is probably one of the most intelligent people I've met, but also I would characterize him as beautifully meek.
Okay.
There's probably a future book coming for me about meekness, but because I believe that meekness is really truly the most underappreciated leadership superpower.
Mm.
Kevin, Dr. Brown could have taken over, set, here's the strategy, here's how we're going to handle this, here's where these students will go, here's how this is going to work, and he didn't. He didn't. He knew that God was in control, the Spirit was in control, and he yielded to the Spirit. And it was a beautiful, beautiful picture of leadership. And I just walked away from that inspired not only by his leadership, but also just fired up for this generation that's coming up.
Yes.
I'm so excited about them and all the things that are happening there. So I really loved that conversation.
That's great.
And so many more. I could probably tell you stories just like you could of folks that you've talked to that have just made an impact on your life.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I will go back and listen to that one. I'll go back and listen to all of them, but for sure that one. So listeners, please check out the podcast, Faith Driven Leader. And then also be on the lookout for Ann's book that's coming out this fall called Faith at Work. And I'm excited. I'm sure that you're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that we've talked about today. But Anne, yes. I want to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
It's such a great question, Lisa. I've been reflecting on this the past couple of days. And the thing that the Spirit keeps bringing me back to is what I would call uninhibited trust.
Mm.
Uninhibited trust. I think a lot of us say, I trust the Lord, but we have inhibitions. We trust, but we also have this logic, right? Right. And I really believe the Lord has me in this season right now of recognizing that our careers can be a way that he brings us into alignment with who he created us to be. And in order for him to do that work, we have to trust, because it is rarely linear. It is rarely what we would predict or project based mm-hmm. on, if you look at the first 5 years of your career, can you project where it's going? I'm sure you could, but then you're controlling it, and that's not uninhibited trust.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving Proctor was uninhibited trust. I just trusted that the Lord was telling me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Starting the garage group, uninhibited trust. Taking a sabbatical for 18 months when I thought it would be 3, uninhibited trust. At the time, I don't know that I recognized that that's what I was doing, but I'm telling you, he rewards it and he honors it.
I could not agree more, but it's not easy. Yeah.
It's not
easy, because we want to be in control.
We do.
But,
you know, the interesting thing, though, Lisa, that I will tell you, I've seen in so many people that I've coached and worked with over the years, and I've seen it to be true in my own life and my own career, is it does get easier, even though the risks get bigger. Because once you've seen how faithful he is in it,
mm-hmm.
you start to actually fear the opposite more.
Yeah.
What if I don't do this thing that he's calling me to do? What will I miss?
Yeah.
That's
a good point, Anne. That's a good point. You know, it's like everybody needs an Ebenezer, right? You need to say, here, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember this, 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 and this. And when you see the faithfulness in this situation, the faithfulness in this situation, I mean, I agree. I mean, it gets easier because you see that, listen, he's never let me down. And even when we don't understand, even when we don't understand. Well, this has been so good. And thank you so much,
Lisa.
It's been fun. I think we could talk for like 10 hours.
I think we could. So fun.
Well, thank you for being on the show. And I'm so excited for our listeners to learn from you. And if you're a listener out there and you need a coach, that's what Ann does. She coaches. She is a keynote speaker. So if you need to book a speaker, if you go to her, why don't you give your URL for for your website? And if you need a speaker and want to go and look at her different topics, she's got 6 or 7 different topics that she speaks on. So what is that?
It's just AnneEileenThompson.com.
Yeah, really hard.
The other resource, Lisa, that I want to offer folks, because I find it's been very helpful and a blessing to some folks, is I have a very simple quiz that you can take that helps you understand where might God be taking your career next in order to bring you closer to alignment with who he created you to be. You can get a link to that on the website. Maybe I'll send you guys a link to put on the show notes.
That'd be great.
It's a great resource. And it'll give you a really comprehensive report on where you are and some really practical tips for how do you pray in this season? Mm-hmm. What does it look like to trust in this season? What are some things that you can be doing in order to embrace what God might be doing in your career?
That is so good. Yeah, and we didn't have time to get into it, but I know that you talk about there's how many different transitions that people go through,
eight different careers.
Yeah. And, you know, Ann coaches on this and speaks on it. So yeah, reach out to her, be on the lookout for her book that's coming out, jump on the website and take the assessment and just get all the goodness there that she has to offer. So Ann, thanks again. I appreciate you and can't wait for our listeners to learn from you.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.